Hello, Serious Eaters. We're back with another episode, another pizza-centric episode of Serious Eats. We've got Peter Rigas back. We have Sasha Marks back. We're going to have Kenji Lopez-Alt weighing in on pizza because everybody needs to weigh in on pizza. And of course, Peter Rigas has now convinced me that pizza in New York and therefore America, at least as far as we know, did not begin at Lombardi's.
Correct.
And Sasha Marks, who is one of our culinary editors and recipe developers at Serious Eats, who spent much time in Rome growing up, and I can tell you that he makes really good pizza. He's actually a really good cook, like a really, really, really good cook. So he's back with us.
Thanks so much.
And then we're going to get Kenji Lopez-Alt in here. So it's going to be a great episode about pizza. So, Peter, what in your research explains the fascination that we all have?
As you said, even not so good pizza is pretty good pizza.
It's still melted cheese on bread.
It's still good. So it's very hard to screw it up. And I think there's an interesting regionalism that sort of happens, so that even if your local pizzeria or the section or the type of the pizza that you have in that particular part of the country is good, you're not experiencing the other ones that may be great. And so even though you have an average the pizzeria, to you, it's very good.
Yeah, you know, Sam Sifton, who's now the food editor of the New York Times, in my pizza book, if you remember, he espoused the pizza cognition theory, which stated that the pizza you grew up with became, in your mind, the paradigmatic pizza. So for people in the Midwest, it's possible that it's a chain pizza because that's the pizza they grew up with. And they didn't know, as you said, they didn't know about all these other places. So it was damn good to them.
Exactly.
And everything else then becomes not pizza in their minds.
Which would be a huge shame. But
yes.
But I feel like pizzas in the States, when you in other countries, people get really worked up talking about food. And, you know, I feel like I've had so many sort of knockdown, drag out debates over food in Italy. But in the States, you don't find that as much, and especially not on a national level. I feel like things are very, people sort of have regional pride for certain dishes and stuff. I feel like pizza is one of the few things that all across the country, you'd be hard-pressed to find someone who doesn't have an opinion about pizza, and usually people have very strong opinions about it, which
yeah,
I really like. There are very few things that people get. I can have like a real sort of fired-up talk
Sasha
about.
And I got into it at Una Pizza Napolitana because,
Blow up my spot on.
But it's great. No, see, I love the joust. That's part of the fun for food for
yeah.
me. You know, when I wrote New York Eats in 1991 or 1992, people would say, you know, that chapter you did on bakeries, you know, you were wrong about the apple pie at so-and-so's, or why didn't you put it? And I was just happy. Of course, this was pre-internet. And so it wasn't until I got to book signings that people would say, oh, you missed this, or you were right about the cherry pie here or the apple turnover there. And I love that. It's just that now the internet has taken the discourse to a very coarse place, no pun intended. And that's a shame because it's fun.
Yeah, it is interesting how much the internet has changed how we debate food matters, and especially about things that are as contentious as pizza.
Yeah. We were talking when my pizza book came out, and I said in my pizza book, that at best Chicago pizza is a good casserole. A columnist at one of the Chicago dailies, when there were many Chicago dailies, took me to task in two columns. And just as like if I were you, Mr. Levine, I'd watch your step if you ever come to Chicago. It's like, really? I just said, I'm just stating my opinion. And I like casseroles.
I lived in Chicago for 2 years, and I would definitely agree on that take on deep dish. One of my favorite Neapolitan pizza places in Chicago, though, Spacca Napoli, which is
fantastic. Is solid, I think. Yeah, and now you do have a Bonce, right?
A Bonce, yeah. And then I love, as far as like deep dish goes, I'm a Pequod's guy.
Of course, the original Pequod Pizzaiolo opened Burt's,
yeah,
which was a legendary place that Anthony Bourdain, the late great Anthony Bourdain, put on his television show, and yet it closed.
Burt Katz died.
Yeah, he passed away.
Burt Katz died, and then a couple of young guys have revived it, right?
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. Yeah, there's good and bad in everything, right? So there's good deep dish and bad deep dish. There's good New York slice, there's bad New York slice. And there is, I think, a problem sometimes when you have that deep dish that can hold virtually anything. Anything can be stuffed in that pizza. So you can put a half an inch of mozzarella in there, even though it's way out of proportion, and it's still functional. You can still cook the pizza that way.
And you can
so it's a little bit of a crutch.
Yes, and you can put a 1 pound sausage patty on top. And of course, then they decided to double down on the crust. Right? With double crusted pizza.
Stuffed pizza.
Stuffed pizza.
One on the bottom, one on the top.
Which makes each pizza 10 pounds.
Right. But it's important to say that's not the original deep dish.
So right. Stuffed pizza no, for sure.
Much later.
But it became a thing.
It did
right?
become a thing.
Did you ever have a stuffed pizza when you were in Chicago? Was that just a slice too far for you?
That was a slice too far for me. But I had deep dish. I don't know if I tried the Giordano's and the Illuminati.
Illuminati. Illuminati. See, he's Italian, so I love that. He said Illuminati.
No, that's like one of the running jokes in Chicago is that you're part of the Illuminati. But yeah, those ones, that's a lot of cheese.
It's so much cheese, and even if you like sausage, just that pound of sausage.
Can I give you a little preview of what my deep dish chapter is going to say?
Yeah, please.
I mean, is that fair?
It's not only fair, it's required.
All right. Well, I'm going to make the claim, I think, as of research now, that the deep dish didn't really start off that deep. They had the deep dish. That's true. I have a photograph of it in the mid-40s. But when they originally started, it was much thinner than it turned out to be. And that's why I think there was some evolution into it. Now, don't forget, they'd started that Pizzeria Uno in 1943 when they had rationing.
Right.
And so...
And this was started by a GI who'd come back from the war?
No.
No? Okay. No. That was another pizza tale.
Right. It was started by... That's an interesting story of itself, but it became public knowledge at some time that the people behind it were Ike Sewell and Rick Ricardo. And Rick Ricardo was a famous restaurateur in Chicago, had his Rick Ricardo the restaurant on Rush Street. And the best information that I have is that when they were making it in the 40s, it was not nearly as thick as it turned out to be. By the 60s, we could say that it did become thicker, it looks like. And the cook times expanded. So you have a thicker dish, you want to cook it some more. But the key crutch is that they had that deep dish, so it didn't really, I mean, anyone could have done it. It could have been even thicker. What we think of deep dish is not necessarily what was there in the 40s or in the 50s, for that matter.
And that's interesting because I think a little bit of why Sasha, I think, likes Pequod's, as do I, and like Burt's Place when I haven't been there since the new one opened, is that it isn't quite as deep, and it's lighter.
Right.
The dough is lighter at Pequod's and at Burt's Place.
One of the critical things about deep dish is the amount of fat they put into it. And by fat, I mean either an oil or a butter of some sort. So it's not just the thickness of it, but the heaviness of that dough. And that's why one slice can fill up most people.
Yeah.
And to me, the addition of butter into the dough is where you lose me on it being pizza. I'm sort of, I can't really.
So Sasha's sort of got one foot in the purist camp and then one foot in the...
I am perfectly happy as long as it's delicious and, like, you know, I feel like to be pizza, it needs to have some things. But, what I like about Pequod's, it's a little more bready and then it's a little more restrained with the cheese. And to me, it reminded me more of a pizza rossa or something that
right.
you would get.
And Pequod's was the place that Burt had the cheese run into the crust, right?
Correct. He caramelized the crust by putting the cheese deliberately on the side of the crust to burn or to caramelize, if you want the nicer word.
Kind of Detroit-y almost.
Right. You know, and of course, Sasha's right in terms of pizza styles constantly evolving and people bringing new pizza to us all. Like now Detroit pizza is a thing in New York. Yeah. Like when I wrote my pizza book, there was not a slice of Detroit pizza to be had. And is there going to be a Detroit chapter in your book?
I got to get the book out. It's been 10 years. I don't think so. I mean, there's some point you have to cut things off. And I like the origins of things. I like the early origins. I'm really fascinated. I'm from Chicago, so I'm going to include that too.
Yeah.
But at some point, the madness must stop.
You know, we're going to have Kenji Lopez-Alt on, you know, who has his own version of pan pizza, which is really, really delicious. I've made. And it's not that big. It's not that thick. So it'll be interesting to see what he has to say about this, because he has a lot of strong opinions about pizza. That's the great thing. Maybe the one thing that everyone has, one of the many things that people have in common when they work at Serious Eats is that they do have a passion for pizza. And I didn't even know that Sasha had a passion for pizza. Now, Sasha, you make pizza. Peter, do you make pizza or do you just eat it?
I do make pizza. I do make pizza.
What kind?
Who said it was Neo...
What Neapolitan American, Jeffrey Steingarten?
Yes, Neapolitan American of that sort. So yeah. I like the crispy outside, tender inside,
yeah.
Big whole crumb structure. That's my type.
Yeah. That's a little bit, it's like Totono's style, I think.
Exactly.
And so I want to know from you, Peter, and from you, Sasha, I want to know, top five pizza,
oh
your
my
top
goodness.
Five favorite.
Oh my God.
Come on, man. You don't
I'm
get...
walking on that one.
You, no,
I'm
man.
I'm walking on that one.
Just give me... All right, so I'm going to phrase it differently. Five pizzerias that you love in Chicago. I'll settle for three if you can't get the five. It doesn't have to be any... It could be any style.
I'm thinking. You've got me frozen in the headlights here. Well, the one that comes to mind is no longer there, called Great Lake. Which
right,
loved,
that was awesome.
And that's a sad day when that left. Some rumors that he might come back.
Right.
So that's, the other one that I loved in Rosemont is gone too, called Romano's. I grew up on that one, so that one's gone too. In Champaign, Urbana, I was raised on, or I went to college with Papa Del's, which is a sort of a deep dish type. It's not
right.
Really a deep dish, but it's kind of like that. I like Coal Fire. I like Spaccanopoli. You wanted a third one? Luminati's is always very good.
Are you a fan of Chicago bar pies like Vito and Nick's?
Yes. I mean, I would categorize that as good, solid pizza. It's not destination pizza, call it in, but it's a good, solid pizza, and they're very good.
What about you, Sasha? You know, like, could be Chicago, New York, just like five pizzerias you love.
So for five pizzas I love in New York, I only moved... back to New York. I was born in New York, but I only moved back here.
All right, so I'll allow you New York, Boston, and Chicago.
All right. Well, for New York so far, I live pretty close to Mama's Too, which just mentioned earlier, and that's a great
beautiful thing.
Sort of neo-New York pie.
Yes, and he just cooked at the Beard House, dude.
Yeah, I saw that. And then, I mean, you had mentioned in your piece that he sort of created, along with, like, they do round pies that you can get by the slice, and then he does these sort of square...
Yeah.
That are sort of a hybrid between a bunchy dough...
Exactly.
..and a sort of Sicilian style or grandma slice
right.
style. And those are really, that's pretty great. Ops Pizza.
In Bushwick?
Yeah, very solid. I like Speedy Romeo's.
You like Speedy Romeo's?
Yeah, it's a good pie.
And you didn't love, you liked Una Pizza, but you didn't love it, right?
No.
It's okay.
Una Pizza Napoletana is great. You know, I think that sort of a real craftsman who, you know, Anthony really cares about every step of the process.
He lives and dies with every pie.
And, I mean, his Filetti pizza is
good. Right, that's
good.
The one with cherry tomatoes. That
yeah,
is amazing.
It's crazy good.
That might be my single favorite pizza in New York.
It's a great, great pie. It's just sort of, for me, I love... the chefs that he's collaborating with on that spot. I love Contra. I love Wild there. But it's sort of that place, it feels a little different than the sort of pizzeria that I grew up going to.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, I think it's moving more towards the pizzeria you grew up with.
Yeah.
Because I think when Pete Wells reviewed it, he said, I'm really reviewing two restaurants in one here.
Right, I remember that. Although I would not be upset with eating that filetti pie and and Fabian's tiramisu yeah. every day. That's
yeah.
So both of those things are ridiculously good.
And Boston?
Boston's a weird town for
yeah, it
pizza.
Is weird.
So my close friends that I cooked with in Maine, one of them has a spot in the Fenway area called Tapestry, and they have great pizza. It's sort of Fenway's like this weird area now for food. But I wouldn't say that Boston has the most amazing
yeah.
pizza I've ever had.
Santorpio's is an old classic. It's not clear to me that it's a great pizzeria, but it's old.
Yeah. I feel like that's one of these interesting things, looking at sort of the history of pizza, is like not necessarily always like debunking, you know, who came up with the first slice or this or that, but like how many of these institutions are still really good.
Right. And are they just old? And you're 100% right, because what people do is they get confused and diverted by the romance. Thank you, Sasha Marks, Serious Eats senior culinary editor, for so much pizza wisdom and opining about pizza, because that's one of my favorite things to do.
Thanks so much.
And thank you, Peter Regas, for writing a book on the history of pizza in America and for teaching me the true lineage of pizza in the States.
Thank you.
But Serious Eaters, don't hit the stop button. While the oven is hot, we can talk pizza with restaurateur Kenji Lopez-Ault, consulting culinary editor at Serious Eats and someone we've known forever, author of The Food Lab, who knows a thing or two about this most democratic of foods. So welcome to Special Sauce. Welcome back to Special Sauce, Kenji.
Well, thanks, Ed.
Kenji, I guess Regas' revelation that Lombardi's was not the first pizzeria in New York is no headline on the West Coast?
That is interesting, and I'm glad to know this before the pizza chapter in my next book is published.
Yes, it's very important. We've all been singing the same song in terms
yeah,
of...
Yeah, but that's the nature of history, right?
Like, I know, it's true.
You have to be willing to accept that history is going to change with new information. You know, history is... History is our interpretation of what happened. It's not.
That's true. It's true. And like this guy was like looking at phone books and then he started talking about descent. He started talking to descendants of different families.
I see. So he makes you look bad, not because you were wrong, but because he's doing this job so much better than anybody has before.
Exactly. He did his job better than we did. And
well, you should be happy.
Yeah, but we are happy. You know, Pete Wells said in last week's episode of Special Sauce, it was like discovering that somebody else wrote the Declaration of Independence besides Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin. And we had Peter on, and then we had Sasha on. He spent much of his childhood in Rome, and he actually made pizza at a Ken Oranger restaurant in Portland.
Oh, Earth?
Yes, Earth. He manned the ovens at Earth, and he said that nothing was so satisfying to him as a chef as when you turned out a perfect pizza. Do you?
Oh yeah.
Do you agree with that? Do you? Could you elaborate?
It's pretty nice.
We
got our we got our wood-fired oven repaired at Wursthall, and so we're adding Flammkuchen, not quite pizza, but. German pizza to the menu, and it is pretty nice to because you're interacting with like a live thing that it takes a certain amount of skill, certainly a lot more skill than working with something like sous vide, where you're working with super precise temperatures. Like, there's nothing precise at all
right.
in a pizza oven. So when you get it right, it's pretty nice.
It's actually, I guess what you're saying, that making pizza is much more a combination of art and craft, because there are those variables.
Yeah, you know,
variables.
I feel like When I make a good pizza, to me, it feels, the feeling I get from making a good pizza is the same feeling I get from, like, if I successfully build like a snow fort, or if I get like a fire going while camping, you know, like, it's like you're battling forces that are not predictable. And you have to use skills that you've developed and learned and practiced, to get it right.
Yeah.
Which is not the same as what you're doing when you're cooking on a predictable stovetop or in an oven.
Right. I remember when I was writing my pizza book that Alice Waters told me that cooking is easy and pizza is hard. And I think it's what she was referring to is just what you were talking about.
Mm.
And you know, that famous line that Chris Bianco told me was that I could teach a monkey how to make one great pizza.
Right.
He said the hardest thing is to make 100 great pizzas when all the variables have changed in the course of the evening.
Yes. That's the real trick, which is, you know, what the next phase at Worsthall is going to be is training and getting the station set up, like optimizing the station so that we can, you know, make pizza at production speeds.
Yeah.
And training the staff to do it.
Yeah.
Right now we're kind of just fooling around and making a couple at a time.
Right. Are you making like tart flambé, like Alsatian things?
Yeah. So we're doing, we're using a not quite Neapolitan dough. We're cutting it with some rye flour and with some spelt flour, fermenting overnight. And then we're rolling it super, super thin, actually rolling it with a rolling pin. Flammkuchen, is sometimes made with a leavened dough, often made with an unleavened dough. And it's, you know, as opposed to Italian style pizza, it's generally super crackery and thin.
Mm-hmm.
So ours is not quite that thin, but it's thinner than like an Italian, thinner and crisper than an Italian pizza. I would say it texture wise, it most resembles like a Roman pizza, you know, where it's like, a little bready, but mostly but super mm-hmm. crunchy and crackery.
Yeah.
So we do that. Yeah. So we do the classic one we do is with, fromage blanc. Actually what we use is we tried a whole bunch of different creams, and the one we found worked best was Mexican sour cream.
Interesting.
Which, yeah, like it bubbles nicely when you cook it, and it's really easy to spread thin, so we use that instead of fromage blanc. Bacon that we slow cook for 48 hours with rosemary and black pepper, shaved onions, and that's it. Olive oil.
Wow. I love that's So you use Mexican sour cream. Is that what you said?
Yeah. Yeah, we use that on two of the flammkuchen. So there's the classic one. Then we do another one with the Mexican cream on the bottom, fresh chorizo that we make in-house, dry-cured Spanish chorizo, pickled chilies, and cambazola, which is like a...
Yeah.
It's like a double cream, so it's sort of like brie, but it's inoculated with penicillium, so it's you know, it's like a blue cheese, but brie style blue cheese from Germany.
Yeah, interesting.
Which works nicely with it.
Yeah, yeah.
The Spanish chorizo.
So, how did you first get into making pizza? Were you just doing it at home, or was it when you were in the restaurants?
It was one of my first restaurant jobs at Cambridge One in Cambridge, on Church Street in Cambridge.
Oh, I remember that place.
Yeah, I started working there right when they opened, which was just after graduating college for me. 2002, I think, something like that.
Yeah,
it was one of my sort of first full-time jobs.
Really?
So the pizza there was grilled pizza, and we used the method that they used at Al Forno.
Right, everyone used Al Forno for everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
Was the seminal grilled pizza restaurant in the United States, at least, in Providence, yes. Rhode Island, still around, even though it was owned by a husband and wife team, and George Germain passed away a few years ago. And he really did man the grill for the pizza oven, but they've continued the tradition. And I've gone recently, and
it's good.
Still really good.
Yeah, when we started, when we started Cambridge One, we actually hired a chef from Al Forno to come up and show us the technique. So it was essentially an Al Forno clone as far as the pizza goes.
I didn't realize that your pizza skills go way back.
My first restaurant job after college, just making pizza, all grilled pizza.
Yeah.
And it's still one of my favorite ways to make pizza.
You have a very ecumenical approach to making pizza. You're not a slave to one style. I think for example, Sasha is more of a purist. I mean, he likes Roman pizza, but he really likes Neapolitan pizza, and he likes both kinds of Roman pizza. But you have a more Catholic approach, right?
I like all kinds of pizza.
Yeah.
I mean, if I had to pick a best, it's going to be a New York slice.
Right.
Because that's what I grew up with. But yeah, I mean, I love all kinds of pizza. It's all good. I don't know why you would have to pick one over the other. You know, people are very into making false dichotomies in food.
Yes.
Like, you know,
like
it
there's
has,
one
it has to
good
be...
way and then everything else yes. sucks.
Yes. Yes. If it's not worth eating, if it's not this particular thing. And that's a really weird approach to take. People do it with food more than other things, I feel like. It's like, you know, it's like you don't say, hey, this is the best Beatles song, therefore none of the other songs are worth listening to ever.
Right.
So, yeah, there is certain types of pizza that I think are best, but I love all kinds of pizza.
Yeah.
The Emos, the St. Louis style.
That's really funny. Made with Provel. Which is nobody's idea of a purist pizza.
My take on that is that the way to enjoy it is to not think of it as pizza, but to think of it as pizza flavored nachos.
I think of it as melted cheese on warm bread.
Well, but the crust can be super crackery if it's done when it's good, you know.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And haven't you been monkeying around with a deep dish pizza
for years? Yeah.
When I said in my pizza book back in 2006 or 2007 that at best Chicago pizza was a good casserole, and my life was in danger.
Yeah, I have a recipe that is going to be in the next book. But, you know, but yeah, I have been mucking around for years. Ed, have you been yet to Windy City Pie in Seattle?
No, is it good?
All right. Well, it is. Yeah, it is the best Chicago pizza I've had anywhere, including
in Chicago. That's so interesting. Better than, like, Burt's Place in its prime?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know if I've been to Burt's Place in its prime, but so it is sort of Burt's Place style. He uses a kind of thicker pan pizza crust as opposed to the, you know, the like
right.
pie dough that you would get at one of the other places like Uno's. So it's a thicker pan pizza. But unlike, you know, what I've had at Burt's and at Pequod's it looked great, but then the bread, the dough itself was kind of a little too dense and not very well, not seasoned at all. Like, no, you know, there's almost no salt in it. And that's something that's kind of a running theme in Chicago pizza, I think.
Yeah. Pequod's pizza lacks salt.
So it's like everything you like about those pizzas, but seasoned properly and done with good.
Interesting.
Bread.
Interesting. I'll have to try it.
Everything you like about those pizzas, which is assuming that there are things that you personally like about those
pizzas.
You know, but it's got like the crispy cheese, you know, the cheese burnt to the edge of the pan, you know, the Detroit style little crispy cheese crust. You know, the sauce is slow cooked and it's done really well. It's all just
yeah,
good.
Yeah, exactly.
Know? Windy City Pie. You're going to be in Seattle in a few months.
And for my book, you did a clam pizza sort of inspired by Zupardi's, right?
Yeah.
And that... You know, when I read the recipe, it was like, this is not a recipe for beginners. This is a serious pizza recipe. To really do it right, you need the right equipment.
Yeah, you can do that recipe using the no-knead method. I mean, pretty much any mixing technique is going to work with any recipe.
Uh-huh.
So long as it's with the no-knead method, it just has to be hydrated above around like 65% or so, and it should work fine with any recipe. Yeah, I can't remember what I called for in the book, either a food processor or a stand mixer maybe, but any recipe that calls for this, you can do by hand.
Right.
Either knead by hand until it gets as to the stage that the recipe recommends, or don't bother kneading it at all. Just mix it together, set it on your counter, covered overnight.
Right.
And, you know, use the no-knead method, which will by the next day, will give you a dough that feels as if it's been kneaded and rested.
And then you talked about either using, I think you talked about using a pizza steel.
Well, a steel or a stone. I mean, a steel I recommend over a stone.
Right, that's right.
It transfers heat better than stone does. It also lasts much longer than stone. You know, it's more expensive. So like a pizza steel will probably cost you 2 to 3 times more than a stone will. But, you know, I used to break pizza stones every couple of years and replace them.
Yeah.
like a slab of steel is never going anywhere.
And the steel is, yes, the steel is going to last longer than the New York City subway system.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It'll be your grandkids. So, yeah. I recommend preheating a pizza steel and then clicking on the broiler just before you throw the pizza in there.
You know what I realized in talking to you now is that this is one of the things we bonded over, you and I. We bonded over pizza. We bonded over a few foods, but pizza was one of them.
Yeah.
And it is one of the things that I love about pizza is that it draws people together, even if you have different opinions. You and I sort of share most opinions. But even if we didn't, it's one of those great things about pizza.
Yeah. You know, and pizza's, built for sharing.
It's built for sharing. It crosses socioeconomic lines. It crosses ethnic lines. It's one of the few foods that's really like that.
This is the theme of my children's book.
That's right. Kenji is writing a children's book that's going to be out in 2020, right?
Yeah.
And do we have a title yet?
It's currently called Every Night is Pizza Night.
Got it. Thank you, Kenji. We really appreciate your taking the time away from Alicia and projects. I can't wait to try Worst Hall and to read. I've read the children's book. It's awesome.
Oh, you still haven't. You haven't been yet.
No.
Huh? It's been open for a year.
I know. It's pathetic. But if we do get it out there in March, we're definitely going to go. But anyway, thanks again. We really appreciate it. And we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thank you.
And we'll see you next time, Serious Eaters.